Your voices sound so hollow. I am not a leader of men, since I prefer to follow. Do you think I could have a drink, since it's so hard to swallow? Yeah, yeah, so hard to swallow. So turn the television off, and I will sing a song. And if you suddenly have the urge, you can sing along. Touch your hand, touch your face. I think the fruit is rotten. And give me lessons on how to breathe, 'cause I think I've forgotten. Yeah, yeah, I think I'd forgotten. One day up to a cliff that overlooked the water, I jumped in to save a girl. She was somebody's daughter. And now this ring that's on my hand was given to me by her. We all sit around and dream of ways to get higher. Yeah, yeah, get much higher. We'll tell your friends not to think out loud until it's swallowed. Whisper things into my brain. The voices sound so hollow. I am not a leader of men, since I prefer to follow. And do you think I could have a drink? It's so hard to swallow. Yeah, yeah, so hard to swallow.
This is CKUW 95.9 FM, streaming at ckuw.ca. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us, and stay tuned. CKUW is managed by the Winnipeg Campus Community Radio Society in accordance with CRTC and Industry Canada rules and regulations. As a not-for-profit station, CKUW is a member of the National Campus Community Radio Association and adheres to their statement of principles to provide an alternative voice. CKUW operates on a frequency of 95.9 MHz on the FM band with 450 watts effective radiated power, or ERP. Our transmitter is located at 7 Evergreen Place in Osborne Village. Programming originates from our downtown studios at the University of Winnipeg in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. We would like to hear from you and welcome your ideas to improve listening, which will be heard on CKUW in years to come. Address your comments and suggestions to CKUW 95.9 FM, Room 4, CM11, at 515 Portage Avenue, Winnipeg, Manitoba, R3B, 2E9. You can also call 204-786-9782 or email us at ckuw@uwinnipeg.ca. This is Seamus Hamilton Pattison speaking for the Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers of CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more great community radio.
Thank you. It's time for Night Danger Radio.
Oh, did you hear that? Welcome, everybody. Hey, it's the Night Danger Radio Show, like I just said, but on recording through the magic of radio. Yes, indeed. But yeah, we got a really, really important special show for you tonight. I'm not going to blab too much because I'm pretty dang notorious for blabbing too much. You can ask Rami Mays about that because I think I almost made her and her incredible band late for their very first date on their Western Canadian tour, which was in Regina, or as some of you call it, Regina. And you'd be wrong. And yeah, I was blabbing this interview that we're about to listen to part one of. And you'll hear in part three that Rami's like, dude, I got to go. We're going to be late for soundcheck, man. And I'm like, oh, crap. You know, maybe I should ease off on the blabbing on and on and stuff. So having said that, without further ado, well, listen, first, what we got to do is, if you don't know the background, you'll get it in the interview. But Rami's releasing her very first record in 9 years. It's called Small Victories. I've listened to it about 3 or 4 times so far, and it just keeps getting better every time I listen to it. You're going to be able to buy a vinyl copy at the big show, at the album release show, which is this Friday night at the West End Cultural Center. And it's going to be incredible. So get down there. Tickets, I don't know the details really, but there might be tickets at the door for $30. But if you buy them right now in advance, they're $25. And you're going to get 2 sets of Rami Mays, kind of like an old school set from a few of her older records. And then you're going to get the new record, all 12 tracks of it in its entirety. So without me blabbing on too much, here is part one with my interview from Rami Mays as she stands on the side of the highway somewhere just inside Saskadelphia. Here we go. Well, hello, everybody. It's with absolute great pleasure that we welcome to Night Danger Radio and back on CKUW Radio, Rami Mays, who is about to release a new record after many, many years. Rami, welcome.
Thank you. It's so nice to be on CKUW. It's been so long, actually, since I've had a nice chat. Many of you guys are amazing over and 95.9.
Yeah.
I'm just standing on the side of the highway. You might hear a couple trucks go by. We're on the road. Today is our first day. I'm not sure when you're actually going to air this, but right now, I don't know if you can hear the ambiance.
I can hear it.
Cars. Yeah, and I'm just standing on the side of this beautiful Saskatchewan highway, heading to Regina to release this album that you speak of.
Amazing, amazing. So I understand the fellas or the band is waiting on the side of the road as well. Like, who's there?
Okay, so Travis McLean is my drummer, and Chris Saywell is my guitar player, and Tom Twisty Bodie is my bass player. And I'm standing here right now staring at a hazards flashing van on the side of the road while I walk pace the highway and talk to you.
Very cool. Wow. Incredible. Oh, yeah, I can hear the cars ripping by, too.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right. So, you know what? Before we get into the new record, which is, if you don't mind me saying, a long time coming.
Thank you. I believe so, too.
Yeah, you made us wait, especially after Devil on Both Shoulders, which is a wicked record. Boy, you sure made us wait for another. By the way, folks, wicked record. If you haven't heard it already, it's out already. And I've had a couple of listens to, and it's amazing. But let's get to the new record a little bit later. So there might be some folks listening to the radio that aren't too familiar with you. So let's do the history lesson first.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, actually, this might be not that far off. My very first question for you is: it looks like you kind of started getting into the music industry, local scene, whatever we want to call it, in Winnipeg, in probably like what, the late 80s, early 90s, I suppose.
Yeah, I'd say about
90. Yeah.
90.
And then the records started coming out like crazy, which is great. But I need to know when you started playing guitar.
Around that same time, actually. When I was about 14, I guess, I started strumming guitar, 15 maybe. And I'd just written some like closet songs, you know, just like people's songs that no one was supposed to ever hear. And I guess that closet songs could have sounded like anything to them. Okay, anyway, but And I wrote, like, you know, songs that meant a lot to me about, like, heavy issues or, you know, like, family stuff. And ignorantly not really thinking that those songs would end up being, like, so revealing, you know. I didn't really think about that yet. I was just trying to write some songs. And, yeah, and then my first time I was ever on stage, I was 15. And Bobby Starr, a local hero to us all,
yeah,
he called me up on stage at the old Blue Note on Main.
Wow.
And, yeah, and I was, like, serving, I was a waitress there serving, like, after-hours teacup beers and whatnot. And the whole room was filled with, like, you know, bikers and hookers and cokeheads and just this maddened scene. And then Bobby called me up to play, and I had never played on stage before, except maybe, like, a talent show, you know, in my school when I was in grade five or something. And then, and I got up on stage, and I just sang, like, these three first really sad fucking revealing, sorry for my French, songs. And then, yeah, and then these, like, bikers and hookers and all these people that was, like, falling their eyes out came up to me and, like, hugged and feel like I broke down the room from, like, a bunch of, like, dark lords to, like, just, like, you know, just these really beautiful, happy people who were, like, suddenly just warmer to each other and everything. So it was a very impactful evening. And then I went home and I was like, well, I guess this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. So.
That's incredible. I had no idea about the Blue Note part. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes when I'm at Blue Note Park now, like the Times Change outdoor venue right next door to it, sometimes when I'm there, I, you know, where there's an area in the corner where I know the stage used to be, and I think about it, that I, like, I started right there, you know?
No kidding. Holy cow. Yeah. That is so cool. So listen, you know, you started playing guitar quite early. And so was there a point, though, where you were like, so I guess when you were invited up on stage at Blue Note, that was it for you, though, for music and the local scene? Or did it take another push, do you think?
I mean, at that time, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. Whether I knew I could do it or not was a whole other thing, you know? But then, yeah, shortly thereafter, my friend Joanne Rodriguez, who I'm still really close with, she's legendary in the city as well. Friends bands like The Giants and American Flame with Sorrells. And so she and I and our friend Chris Sable, who's actually in the band right now as my guitar player, we were about maybe 16, 17 or something like that, maybe 18. And we started a trio and we started playing a circuit. So we started just playing all the time. And that really sort of started my stage performing more often.
For sure. Was that was there a name to that group? Or
it's funny that you say that because I was trying not to say it.
Oh.
Because it's called Gidget. We were called Gidget Gaga.
Oh wow!
But Gidget Gaga is from a Cheech and Chong movie.
Oh.
In it, he says it's a movie that they want to watch, and it says Gidget Gaga gets gooey.
No way! Oh my god, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so it's funny you say that because it actually did have a good story, but I was like, maybe I'll just not say the name.
That's hilarious. Well, I'll have to bug J-Rod about that. I was lucky enough to go to high school with J-Rod, so I...
She's the best.
Yeah, she was so funny. The funny thing is in high school, I had no idea she was that, you know, talented. She was kind of quiet in high school. She didn't really flaunt her rock and rollness. And now I'm like, okay, rock and roll god here, I'm telling you.
Yeah,
so
she's the goddess of gods.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, so back in the 90s, maybe you could even go back to the late 80s. I'm really curious as to what you were listening to back then.
It was weird because I really started, all I listened to a lot was like radio, but I didn't really like anything pop radio. So I was listening to lots of the classic rock, like Zeppelin, Doors, Jimi Hendrix, VCR, you know, so stuff like that. And like even ZZ Top and AC/DC and even a little Maiden and Ed Tree sometimes, but mostly just like classic rock. And then I didn't realize then, like, then as my taste matured later and I listened to like a lot of blues, I was really loving the style of blues music for sure. And I didn't really put it all together until I went, oh my god, AC/DC, Zeppelin, ZZ Top, all these Doors, like these bands are all blues bands, you know?
For real.
And then I realized like it really just narrowed it right down to like, obviously I can think, I can figure out what I like, you know? And I mean, I was listening to lots of Joan Jett and Blondie and Pat Benatar and I, like, you know, and Tom Petty even then too. And yeah, just really, you know, really inspired by like sort of bluesy rock and roll, I guess.
For real. You know, I have a personal question for you here. So when I first started hearing about you way back in the day, I heard somewhere, and I think this is even pre-internet, so I don't know where the heck I would have heard this, but you kind of answered this already, but I heard you were an Iron Maiden fan, and then I listened to your music, and I'm like,
I don't know. That's So can you confirm or deny the Iron Maiden connection? I think you kind of have, but yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, just because someone plays jazz doesn't mean they don't like Metallica. You know what I mean? Or whatever.
Right.
You know, and I think that even though I don't play any metal in any way, shape, or form, there are some riffs and some, like, there's even a vocal in one of my songs that I can think of right now where, in this song called Wonder How, where I kind of get the audience going like, oh, you know, in a kind of the chant, and I'm like, that's probably the Maiden in me.
Yeah, I wonder. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's, you know, it all comes into play. I do write a hell of a soft, pretty one, though, hey? And it's kind of confusing for people to understand that there's so much rock in there, too, because those pretty ones are so goddamn sad and soft.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. We'll get into that too a little bit later about the new album, because it's very interesting to me how the new album, you know, how you set it out, you know, for putting out. It's great. But got a question for you, and again, J-Rod's right back in the mix here. But so I thought maybe Off the Wagon was your first band that wasn't, you know, Rami Mays solo, but I'm obviously wrong with that.
No, you're not. You're not wrong at all.
Oh.
That was my very first band I ever had where I had a band behind me, and then it was called Off the Wagon, and then I left town, and Off the Wagon morphed into more of a country bluegrass band with Joanne and Jackson Haldane and actually Chris Saywell and Twist D. Fody, who are in my band right now. Also, that was the beginning of the Derangers, that band. So then when I moved back to Winnipeg, they were already kind of this country bluegrass band. That's where I learned to play a lot of my country bluegrass stuff. But I was mostly just a harmony singer, rhythm guitar player. But Off the Wagon did actually start my band, but that wasn't the band that Off the Wagon was when everybody heard.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm. Okay. Interesting as heck. Yeah. I actually remember buying the CD for Off the Wagon and being all hyped. I'm like, wow. And I still own it to this day. It's still in good shape, by the way, Rami. I really keep care of my local stuff, and then, you know, my Iron Maidens and stuff are all beat up. But anyway, so you mentioned one other band. So I had another question written down here. You know, besides Off the Wagon and the Cheech and Chong band, were you, because I find it interesting that you've been solo for so long, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And having different, different amazing musicians, you know, coming in and kind of going like through your projects. Were there any other bands, though, that you were in perhaps before, you know, the Rami Mays solo era began in the 2000s there?
No. When I left Off the Wagon to move back to the coast, I went back to BC. I was born and raised in Winnipeg, but I kept kind of going back out that way. And I was doing a lot of hitchhiking and traveling and all this stuff. So I left in 97 or 98, I guess, and went out to the West Coast. And then from then on, anything I did was called Rami Mays. Or actually, I got married in 2000. And then I took the name Mays. My maiden name is actually Reikis, Rami Reikis.
Oh.
And so then I was, then from then on, anything I did that was a project that was something that I wanted, and then when I moved back to Winnipeg, especially when I started playing there and started to build my career back up up for the first time, I guess. It was Rami Mays, but I never had a band other than that, yeah.
Okay.
I was really jealous of that, actually. I've always wanted to be like in some band with name like Nucleosis, or like,
yeah, exactly.
Just something cool, like, you know, let's name our band, you know. But so, yeah, it just falls in that it's my stuff and rotating player sometimes. So,
wow. So, I didn't know that you were kind of back and forth in Vancouver there. Were you still doing music in Vancouver, just a different scene, or what was?
Yeah, actually, I wasn't really in Vancouver much, even though I said the coast in BC, it was the island. I spent a lot of time on Vancouver Island. I lived out there for a while. And I got married there and divorced there and had my daughter there.
Nope.
Yeah, I was on Vancouver Island. Yeah, I was in Nanaimo and Tofino mostly.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Tofino is so beautiful. Unbelievable.
It really is.
Yeah, just please take the cost down.
I tried to surf. I wasn't very good at it.
Is that right? Yeah, Tofino and Euclid. All those places. Wow. So, sorry, when did you come back to Winnipeg and perhaps why?
In 2002, I moved back to Winnipeg. I think it was actually because I was visiting with my daughter. She was 2 at the time. And I was just, like, having this great visit with my friends and the perpetrators and the derangers were kind of reigning supreme over at the Times Chains. And I was there, and, you know, within the week that I was there, I got to sing with all of them. And they was like, on, you know, oh, we got to get you into the studio really quick to get, a, you know, something from you. And, like, all my friends were really thriving in the music scene here and or there. And then so when I was feeling, you know, it was time to go back to the coast to where I was at in my life, I thought, you know what, that's, I'm in the wrong spot. Like, I'm not doing what I want to be doing. So in 2002, that's why I pretty much up and brought my daughter and moved on to Winnipeg.
W95.9 FM, homegrown in Winnipeg.
Don't want no fancy diamonds, I don't want your mother's pearls. Don't want you to tell me that I'm your only girl, just want a man. Come on back, pick me up and take me for a ride. Don't need your folks for dinner, I don't need to impress. Don't need to walk the aisle, I don't need the fancy dress. I don't need to hear you love me while you look deeply in my eyes. Why can't you be my sweet, something steady on the side? girls. Don't want you to tell me that.
Oh, yeah, CKUW 95.9 FM. Hello, it's the Night Danger Radio Show, and we're 27 minutes into it, and it's our Rami Mays Extravaganza. Yes, indeed. I can't remember what the date was. What was it? Was it Wednesday? I can't remember. It was last Wednesday, I think, that we did a phone interview. And Rami was standing at the side of the road during this interview. As you probably heard the trucks and cars going by there and whatnot. But thanks, Rami, for doing that. I kind of changed the date up on her. I was like, oh, can we do this today? And she's like, yeah, fine. But I'm on the road. I'm like, dang, okay. But listen, we just heard Rami Mays, surprisingly, or not so surprisingly, with Sweet Something Steady from an album of the same name. That one came out in 2008, and as we discuss a little bit later in the interview, it's DIY. It is self-released, as pretty much, I think we've decided that every Rami Mays solo record is self-released. With a little bit of help distribution-wise, it's confusing. But we heard Off the Wagon off the top with My Window Faces the South from the self-titled Off the Wagon record, which came out in 1997. And I have it listed as Dollar Tone Records, that's what they listed on the interwebs. But anyways, not important. That Off the Wagon record, if you can get your mitts on it, I would probably do that. In fact, I would probably get it if you can. And I'm probably going to ask Rami at the show. I'm going to say, do you have do you have CD copies of these like in a box in your basement that I could buy for $10 a piece or something, you know? That would be excellent. So, because I don't have them all. I only have a few. So, anyway. We got them all here, though, at the radio station. So we're going to be playing Rami Mays off CD. We're pulling it from the archives for sure. All right, listen. We're going to do this every time, as a matter of fact. This Friday at the West End Cultural Center, it's the album release party. And you can probably get your tickets at the door, but I don't know if I would do that. I would maybe just get on the West End's website and get yourself your ticket now, because this is going to be a spectacular night. Two sets of Rami Mays. One is going to be the new record, and one's going to be all the old hits. So without further ado, here is part two of my interview with Rami Mays. Here we go. So early 2000s, your solo records start coming out. I'm wondering how your songwriting has changed over the years, or if it has changed.
I don't know. I mean, it would be a really neat evolution to witness. Actually, just in the car, in the van, a few minutes ago, Twisty told me that he found some old track recordings from like way back in the day where we were talking about different backgrounds in songs, and he said there was one time we were playing at some fire or something, and someone recorded it, and there were crickets in the background, and I said, oh, isn't that a nice foreshadowing, you know, but as a joke. But anyways, it's just the cricket sound. And I said, well, I'd love to hear that one day, because he said, yeah, there's songs that I don't think I've ever heard you do otherwise that you wrote. So I'm like, well, that's neat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, wow. So
I don't know how much my style has changed, except that my guitar abilities have changed and my vocal strength and my vocal confidence has changed, just because if you give it enough time, you'll just start being more creative and more confident, I guess. So, yeah, more skilled, hopefully. So, yeah, I guess that's all that's really changed. My sentiments, I think, have always been the same.
Do you find, I know with the guitar, I have no idea how to play guitar, but I know if I kind of sat down and really practiced, I could probably get half decent.
I teach beginner guitar. I haven't in a while, but I teach beginner guitar. And when I teach it, it amazes people how I just have to show them a few chords even to start so they can get their confidence up to even want to keep going with all the other stuff. But all you have to do, people say, like, well, I've tried, I'm not good at it. It's like, well, Jimi Hendrix wasn't good at it the first time he picked it up either. You know what I mean?
No, for sure.
Some people are just naturally gifted, for sure, but these things, you have to try to keep doing them, and then you can get better at them. But you can get better at it so quickly to play, like, you can play G, C, and D. You can play almost every song ever written, and then you're having the time of your life at a bonfire.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. Do you think that's the same, though, you know, with your voice? Like, do you kind of mentioned that you obviously used it, you know, a lot over the years, obviously. Mm-hmm. But do you feel like that's the only way to get your voice better? Like, are you either born with it or you're not? Is that kind of the deal? Or?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I cannot sing when I was younger. I'm pretty sure I might have been phoned up at one point. I might still be. I have, like, a cassette recording in my keepsakes in the basement of my house that has, like, a cassette tape of me trying to just sing, like, TV theme, like, show songs, like, or song, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
TV theme, what am I trying to say? TV theme show songs. Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, whatever. So, like, I'd be like, show me that smile again.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, and I was really shitty at it. I was really bad at it. And I know that I couldn't sing very well. I just really wanted to. And then I guess this maybe a little bit of skill came in there along the way, but I think it's because I wanted to so badly, you know, that you just sort of learn control and you learn confidence and things like that along the way. I think everybody can sing a little. Some people just can't. I get that. But if you can sing a little, you can sing a lot.
For real. Yeah. So you didn't take any lessons, guitar lessons or voice lessons? You're just kind of self-taught?
Well, mostly self-taught, 100%. Mostly 100%.
Yeah.
But no, I did take two guitar lessons once. I took two, and the second when he tried to teach me Stairway to Heaven, but I had a big crush on him because he was super cute. So, like, I tried to learn it as fast as I could, and I guess I had some skill because that's hard to do right off the bat, but I was sort of doing it a little bit, and then I just, like, didn't want to play guitar anymore. I just listened to whatever he had to say and started talking about something else. And then I laughed, and my mom was like, how was guitar lessons? And I said, that guy is so cute. those are done.
That was the end of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're not going to waste money on that anymore, little Ronnie.
That's hilarious.
That guy is so cute.
Oh man! So when you're writing lyrics, you've got multiple records out, and I'm sure there's songs that no one's like you were saying that no one's even heard yet, and perhaps right. You haven't heard them in a long time. But I'm wondering about the evolution of lyrics. Are you kind of sticking to the same topics, or you know, are you all over the place? How do you get inspired for writing lyrics?
Yeah, I guess at one point I thought that maybe I was done. Like, I was like, I've said enough sexy and sad things. You know what I mean? I kind of feel like that's, like, I'm either a sexy lyrics or sad. Or not sad, but, like, maybe inspirational, but kind of, like, you know, relationship-based, that kind of stuff. I just really, really just end up writing these, like, and, you know, you think of a perspective in a quick way that sounds really cool to say it. And you're like, well, now I want to build a whole story around it, you know? And, you know, whether it's experiences that I've had or experiences that people around me have had that I pull from, or now that I'm older I've experienced and seen a lot more as well. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's sort of just, it always feels like the same topics, but I just think that there's, like, a different way to say it every time, you know?
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Listen, we'll change the subject a little bit, but you've won and been nominated for quite a few dang awards out there, including the Western Canadian Music Awards and the Junos. I wonder what your thoughts are on awards like that.
Well, they're really nice, to be honest. You know, when I was younger, I always really liked to be graded. You know, like, if I, like, wrote an essay or, like, a book report or, you know, anything that you handed into the teacher, I just couldn't wait for my grade. You know, so I think that it is hedonistic a bit, of course, and, like, it's pretty self-centered to want to be, you know, get that pat on the back. But to be completely honest and unashamedly to say, like, I totally feel that when I get an award, it's, like, really nice to be noticed, that people care, that my hard work isn't going to waste, and that then I get to celebrate it and get to share that information with people, or my family gets to, which makes them proud. And so I kind of like them, you know?
For sure. Excellent. I noticed one thing, too, like, looking through all your discography, you've always been pretty DIY, do it yourself,
yeah.
But you have had some help over the years, like, you've signed to a couple of labels and whatnot. I'm just wondering, did you prefer it with a label, or do you like it just doing your own thing and whenever you want it and how you want to do it?
Yeah, I mean, the latter, obviously. I've never really had a label. I've never had a label in Canada or U.S. ever. I've always, and I didn't have a manager ever. So So, like, I've just, like, hired publicists and things like that under my own umbrella of my company, which is me. And so I've really enjoyed that. Like, I mean, I've always really liked doing exactly what I wanted to do when I want to do it or not doing it, and it's just up to me. It's not someone else's dollar or someone else's plan, you know, and I've loved that. And it hasn't gained me as much success maybe financially or famously that it could have if I had the right people working for me to help me get there. But at the same time, who knows? And also, I don't care. You know, I kind of just like being at this pace the whole time, and I've enjoyed my career very much. And the only label I ever had actually was in Europe, and I really appreciated that. I do have distribution, like, which is really important for your album, and digital distribution in Canada and U.S. And you know, and I know the connections I've made in Europe are pretty homegrown, too. But when I worked with the label in Europe, it was really handy. I mean, they put together a tour, they had a booking agent for me, and stuff like that, and I'm not used to that. I do that shit a lot by myself, so... Yeah. You know, so yeah, so but it was really nice. But of course, I don't want to work on anybody else's clock but my own ever, ever, ever. So that's definitely appreciate my own running of the show.
For sure. So sorry, Saved by Vinyl, though. I think, didn't they do Aiken in My Bones? Or
actually, that's just who manufactured it.
Oh, I got you. So it was more of a.
That's just who printed the copy. Yeah, they didn't. They didn't have any. Anything to it, yeah.
I got you. Yeah, it's confusing, actually, because
It's a very big business with a lot of little loose ends and ties and publishing, licensing, and all these things, and it's a lot of stuff, and I think that's what the age that I'm at sort of, it makes me feel more confident to go forward with how I want to do it, because I know what I can and should do, and just ask the right people to help you when you need it, and have made the contacts to do so, but there are a lot of moving parts that it definitely, you have to, knowing the business is a very, very big advantage, or having someone who does work with you.
Are you doing it all yourself, though, or do you have some help?
I do.
Oh,
no,
wow.
I really do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow. That seems daunting, you know, for sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, but, you know, it's just something I can do. I mean, when I have the other company that I work with, Curbside Concerts, and that's what we do for other people in a lot of ways. Like, over the years, I've been a booking agent. I've been a publicist. I've been, like, in marketing and, like, all the things. But I've just always done it my way and through me and, you know, and just, yeah, it's a lot of work. But it's just, you don't have anybody else telling you how to do it. I mean, I just like the way I do it. I like the way we do it. Maybe it's a control freak thing, but I think it's smart. If you can do it, then why as well?
That's amazing. Yeah, that's wicked. Hey, listen, I just got back from the Folk Fest, which you played in, I wrote this down, 2005, 2010, 2015, and way back in 2007 with some people called the Temporarily Employed. What are some of the other touring highlights for you? Because I'm sure you must have enjoyed the Folk Fest, but you've played all over the dang place. So do you have any highlights that maybe stick out for you?
Oh, man, that's a really hard question. I've been very fortunate. I've been able to tour in Italy, which is a very big highlight of my life. I've done that a few times. I was able to see Cape Town, Newfoundland a few times out there in the Maritimes. And, you know, to go from coast to coast and touch both waters, you know, and just music to, you know, all over Europe, you know, like I've been a lot of places in Europe, Sweden, UK, Prague, which was amazing. And then like Holland, Belgium and Germany, which is my main area of in Europe, and then, you know, just all over the U.S. and I mean, it's the stories are endless, and the places, each one has its own character, and each one leaves a very big mark. There, you know, there's a great place in Germany. See, the reason that I'm like, I don't know, I'm trying to kill time with saying everything has been wonderful is because I'm Blues Garage, and I can't remember the damn name of the town. It's amazing. That place is like, you know, if you get a chance to play there, you have to. And that's pretty memorable. And I mean, there's, I don't know. I couldn't even start. I'm standing on the side of the highway. The guys are just waiting in the van. I should probably cut this pretty short.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's just too many to name. I've just been lucky my whole life, and I'm fortunate for every minute on stage, whether it's a shitty gig or not.
I think I know the answer to this. Do you prefer playing live or recording?
I think I prefer recording, but I wouldn't want to do it if I couldn't play live later.
She left her heart across the ocean. sentimental notion. She turned and then she walked the other way. Her name up on the bright lights. She tried the best she could to keep the pace, but she shone under the moonlight. He liked the way he lit her pretty face. Taxi, but the hour was getting late, and he put his arms around her, and his car was so much warmer than the rain. Older, na 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 na, you're growing colder. picture's bigger when you see it through your eyes. Just one more time before it's over. Say something you mean, say it when you're sober.
Man, I love that song. I love all the songs. This is like Night Danger Radio's greatest hits of Rami Mays, and I had to really rein myself in to not just make the whole 3 hours Rami Mays, because there's so many damn songs that are so good. So we really had to, you know. I actually flipped a coin a couple of times to get these songs figured out for the show here. But we just heard Devil on Both Shoulders from a record that I mentioned earlier that I just absolutely love. And that came out in 2015. And of course, Rami self-released it. And we heard After the Show, which I've played, I think, a couple times already, on this radio show. And that's from a record called Lucky Tonight. And that was 2011, and Discogs has that one listed as Saved by Vinyl. But like Rami was saying, it's a little confusing, the whole, you know, music industry thing. Like I assume Saved by Vinyl was, you know, did the whole thing, but never assume. I guess that's the rule. Don't assume nothing, because there's a good chance, 50-50 anyways, that you're wrong, the opposite of right. So there you go. All right. What time is it? Hey, it's 12:51 in the a.m., and thanks for sticking around. I want to remind everybody that this Friday, the July the 26th, at the West End Cultural Center, we're all going to get into the, you know, one of the best live music venues probably in Canada. I mean, I'm no expert. I could ask Rami and people like that have toured all over the place, but I'm wondering if they won't be like, yeah, the West End is just ridiculously great place to see a show. I certainly enjoy it, but it's happening, like I said, this Friday night. What a great Friday night, you know, freaking July, summer, and the new record is spectacular. So listen, again, I'm blabbing on here a little bit, but get out to the show. You can get your tickets via the West End Cultural website. So go do it. You can maybe get tickets at the door for $30, but you can save $5 and get them in advance. And then, of course, you got that peace of mind that you're in. Because I am not 100% sure there'll be any tickets left at the door. Who knows? We don't know. So anyways, listen, this is part three. This is the final part of the interview with Rami Mays. And we get into the new record here in this final segment. So here we go. Should I do a countdown? 2, 1, go. Oh, that didn't work. Wait. wait, where are you? Oh, yeah, I got to press this button. And then this red light comes on. And then two, one.
All right. So here we are in the home stretch, because I know you got to get to the venue, right?
It's hotter here.
Yeah, I bet you. But we got to get to the new record, because the new record is, in my opinion, spectacular. So the new album, it's called Small Victories. Why is it called Small Victories?
Well, I mean, there's a story behind it, but I'll give you the gist. The gist is basically, especially COVID, everything, you know, my daughter had a son, and he wasn't well, and then he had a miracle surgery, and all these things happen to all of us all the time. And you started having to take a step back and go, you know, the fact that we're not, like, our friends are dying, and, like, you know, the fact that we're not ill, that we have our friendship, that we have enough money to go get a sandwich, the fact that we have shelter. You know, the world's a fucked up place, crazy place right now. And I just think that the small victories are hardly celebrated. You know, the fact that I'm able to somehow magically talk to you on a rectangle piece of something in the middle of nowhere, right, while my amazing band waits in a van while we get to go play a show tonight. And it's like a beautiful day, and I'm walking through like a field. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's a small victory, and I don't. And it's a big one for me, but. And so the whole, once I realized that that's what my theme of everything was, like, you know, it's just sort of everything fell into place.
For sure. You crowdfunded this record. Was it your first time crowdfunding it?
No, it was the second time I ever did that, and it was just as humbling, if not more. The only thing that was different this time is, I really believe that music is free now. It's like it's a very big epidemic.
Yes.
That's happened, and like I said, pandemic. But it's there's no way for me to make money off an album that will cost me 30, 40 grand to make. You know what I mean? Like, by
yes,
the time I've done the photography and the design and the manufacturing and paid the studio, paid the musician, you know, everything. These things cost so much money. These things cost time and money. And so I just knew that I wouldn't have that capital sitting around without a possible return, at least. And there was no way to return it, because all of the world was just getting everything for free on a streaming platform of sorts anywhere. So this time I just said, hey, does anyone want to chip in to the making of the album? Because you can have it for free once it's done.
For sure. Amazing.
Yeah.
Where was the album recorded? And please let everyone know about the band that was backing you up, because that is important.
Yeah, sure. So it was at No Fun Club, actually.
Yeah.
It's actually a very unassuming little place right near Flea Whiskey's, in the same parking lot off Portage there.
Yeah.
But it's this amazing studio. They have Studio A and B. It's beautiful.
For sure. Amazing.
And it was amazing. And so I used most of my band, but my drummer was out of town, and so we got lucky enough to have one of the best drummers in the world, Damon Mitchell, play all the drums on the album. We had Tom Twisty Fody, who's in my band and in that band. He played bass. Chris Daywell played all the guitars, except for on two tracks. Well, he played all the guitars in all the albums. And then on top of that, we had Dana Wickey, who I've toured with forever from the Perps. He went and came in and played a couple of slides. And then myself, and there were some guests. We had J-Rod on a bunch of about five songs.
Oh, wow.
Paul Dane came in and sang on about three or four songs, and he also played mandolin on one of the songs. And then we had Heather Forces, who sold James. She came in on a couple songs. TJ Blair came in a song.
Wow.
And I think that does it. I think that's my album.
Holy cow. Okay. Good grief. Listen, I want to get to the part about how you laid out the record. So side one, I guess we'll call it, is nice and quiet. You know, beautiful songs. And then side two gets raunchy and rocky. What made you decide to do it like that? Anything at all? Or?
Originally, I knew I was going to make a limited edition vinyl, so that we did do that. I knew I was going to do that. So I did have this idea, because when I was starting to put together the songs for the album, I realized I had six that I really liked that were really mellow and six that I really liked that were heavy. But I wasn't sure how to make that flow in an album. I just, in the past, my albums had, say, one or two or three slow songs over 12, so you can kind of weave them in the heavy stuff. But this one I didn't go up and down. And then I had this idea to do a soft side and a heavy side. So when I realized I was going to do that, then I sort of focused on that. So it says soft side A and heavy side B. The only thing that sucks about that, which doesn't suck that much to me, but in theory, is that in, like when you're listening to it on a streaming platform, you know, I had someone once tell me recently, like, oh, your album's so mellow. It's so beautiful. It's so mellow. And I was like, you didn't make it to song six, did you?
You're right. You know? Right.
Because, you know, the first six are slow. And if you're getting, that's what you're getting for the album, you're like, wow, this is really mellow. But then you make it to six, and six and 12 are heavy, right? So unless you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, for sure. You got to listen to the whole album, folks. It's scary good. Wow, it's crazy.
Thank you. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you the question that everyone's going to ask you now. I saved it till near the end here, but 9 years since Devil on Both Shoulders, which, as I mentioned earlier, is like, I love that record as well. So what happened? What's with the 9 years? Was that like a total plan, a Rami Mays schemed plan or?
Yeah, no, I wasn't sure. I just kept, years kept passing, but, you know, lack of inspiration, the economy, the gas prices, digital technology, you know, pretty much anything that could work against a musician and their inspiration worked against me in those moments, and as they did many. But, I mean, people during COVID were writing tons, and I just felt nothing. I was like, I'd rather just, like, start binging this show. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel creative. I didn't talk to anybody, really, you know, like, just hung up with my family, and I just didn't feel really inspired. And then that just kind of continued. But it seemed like after I did the Lucinda Williams tour last year, like we did a show that was all Lucinda Williams songs, and we took it across Canada.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. It was really fun. And when I got back, I guess some of that seeped in. So I started finishing all the songs I started and wrote a bunch of stuff. And that's when I was like, hey, I'm not going to wait anymore. And it just happened to be 9 years. I mean, it sucks that it was that long. I felt like I was collecting, you know, dust instead of just collecting, you know what I mean? Like,
for real, yeah.
You know, yeah. So, yeah, so it ended up being just like, you know, it was just 9 years. But it does feel really good. I mean, it felt great to be back in the studio. It feels great today to be, I gotta go. Like, we're going to be late for our gig.
Okay, I got a couple more for you, though, real quick. The album releases July the 26th at the West End. So what can people expect from this? It sounds like there might be guests and all kinds of stuff, or are you going to keep this on the down low?
No, it's going to be exactly the album. All the guests that were on the album are going to be on those songs. Yeah, it's going to be Debbie. And we're going to present the album in the first set, back to our front to back. And then in the second set, we're going to just do some of the hits that people really seem to like of my music, and to have a fun second set